As we say in New Mexico, may God grant you good days. We also say, buenos días, le de Dios. My name is Lawrence, and I'm an alcoholic. Truly grateful to be here, grateful to be sober, and great to be a part of an organization that is bigger than me. And being here at the International, I get to celebrate life and sobriety with a lot of people who love Alcoholics Anonymous as I do, and for that I'm grateful. I'd like to thank the committee for allowing me to come and share my experience, strength, and hope. And this morning I'd like to just acknowledge the most important people in these rooms are the newcomers. And we want to welcome you. So I'm here to talk about emotional sobriety. And for a crazy guy who made it to Alcoholics Anonymous through the way of a mental institution, I didn't have a clue about emotional sobriety. I'm from northern New Mexico, and I had my first drink at the age of 12. And when I took that first drink, by the time I did, I was pretty disturbed. And I loved what alcohol did for me from that first drink. And I went back every time to try to get that feeling and that effect, despite the consequences. You know, but I've come to the realization early on, as I came into Alcoholics Anonymous at the age of 22, that without a doubt that I have lost the ability to control my drinking. Once I start, I cannot stop, period. And sobriety began. And for me, it got worse before it got better, because at a year sober, I tried to kill myself. And I was put in a mental institution. And I thought just getting sober was enough. So I'm locked up in a mental institution, and I'm thinking, I didn't drink, but how do you flunk Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, the judge thought that I needed a little more extra help. You know, and I like what it talks about in the doctor's opinion. You know, and I understand the physical part about leaving the physical out. You know, that what makes me an alcoholic. You know, but there's a lot of things that I suffer from, grave emotional and mental disorders. You know, I was maladjusted to life, and I felt that I was broken. You know, I didn't feel like I... It was more than just not fitting in. I just felt that I was broken and that there was no hope. Even in sobriety, being in that mental institution. You know, it was there that I seen my way out was the 12 steps. You know, that you know, the God debate, my defiance, me not working the steps, not working with the sponsor, that it didn't work. How's it working, Lawrence? It's not working. And that just not drinking was not good enough for me. And the suicide attempt, you know, and my certificate from the state hospital, mental institution for, you know, certificate of completion was my reminder of what, how things work out my way. You know, but as the book says, that honesty... And emotional sobriety to me began with my second step, where I came to believe in a power greater than myself. You know, and I have a story that it wasn't that I didn't believe in God, I didn't feel worthy of God. And you know, and when I was a child, I had an experience where I was around a lot of violence, and I ran into the restroom and I was praying at age 7 years old, praying to God, this God that I thought I knew, to stop this violence that was going on. And I prayed and prayed, and I didn't think God was listening to me. So I started praying in Spanish to say maybe He could hear me in Spanish. And I felt he never answered my prayer. You know, and it was from that point as a child that there was a disconnect from a power greater than myself. And I was on my own. But looking about emotional sobriety and what the 12 steps have done for me is that God has answered my prayers. You know, but it's through the 12 steps. I thought it's about talking pretty and looking good in meetings and doing all the external. But AA and the 12 steps have led me into the 12 steps. Because the miracle of sobriety is not only about not drinking, it's about a spiritual experience. You know, and through all my brokenness and my failures as I was drinking, but also in sobriety, is that I realized in step two, I love this saying, first there was the fall, second there was the recovery from the fall, and both are the mercy of God. And by me getting over the God debate, because I like to debate, but sometimes I wanted the God debate or I'm not perfect because I don't want to take responsibilities. How's your steps, Lawrence? Are you meeting with your sponsor? We don't do this just for popularity. We do it for transformation. And what the steps do for me is, like I like to say, out of observation, there's transformation. And the 12 steps is the best medicine I've ever taken for somebody who came into AA with two trash bags full of clothes to see how a program could really impact one's life. But you know, I always like, you know, my idea of success was sex, status, and security. If I have that, I'm taken care of. Matter of fact, when I was in the state hospital, I'm thinking easier, softer way. I'm a year sober. I flunked AA. I didn't drink, but I'm locked up. And I'm thinking, man, I get a meals, a roof over my head. They dress me. There's dentists, doctors. I said, all I need is a girlfriend and in here and I'm set. Easier, softer way. You know, but sobriety, I see too about the external things that I chase. And there's four things that drive me crazy, and that's relationships, work, money, and health. And they drive me, those external things that I think I need in order to be okay. And I always say, why do I seek a material solution for a spiritual problem? And I'm going to chase it. And I'm going to lie about it. I'm going to talk about it because I don't want you to know who I am and what's inside me. But learning through the steps, the conscious contact with a power greater than myself. What is conscious contact? You know, and it's a beautiful experience. It's an intimate experience that has changed my life. Not to say that I'm better than or less than, it's just the fact that this works. Emotional sobriety also is learning to walk through the pain and walk through challenging times in one's life. That sometimes if I made the mistake that I need to take responsibility, you know, and I'm going through something really bad and that I utilize the steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to help me walk through those pains. Because I don't want to talk about this stuff. You know, I'm more external than internal. But I'm learning not only to face my demons that I thought they were, but I'm learning to face my fears. And I love the steps because the more and more that I go, you know, it gets more and more deeper inside to my true self, to the soul. And that sobriety is much bigger than just not drinking. You know, sometimes with my selfishness and self-centeredness, I see that we live in a country that we're free, and we also have spiritual freedom. But sometimes I use that freedom to take my own freedom away. due to my selfishness and self-centered. And I have found that a relationship with my higher power, whom I choose to call God, you know, is everything. God is or He isn't. He is everything or He is nothing. And let me tell you, in Alcoholics Anonymous, we are so liberal with our own conceptual of God. And thank God that is. But I don't need to apologize for believing in God either. It works both ways. And let me tell you, I'm a believer. Some of the hard things to say for an alcoholic, and this has been my salvation. You know, we talk about surrender, but there's three things that I say that helps me when I'm down and out. The first one, which is hard for alcoholics, is I don't know. The second one is I'm scared. And the third one is I need help. You know, hopefully by the grace of God, I think I'll make it. Tomorrow I'll be celebrating 24 years of continuous sobriety. And what a place to come and celebrate. You know, I had a long-timer tell me one time, I go through the steps on a yearly basis, you know, and I, over the last 23 years, do an inventory once a year, and I've just found it to be very helpful. But I heard this long timer say, he said, you know, Lawrence, spirituality is more than just words. Spirituality is experiencing the presence of a higher power in your life. And when I'm in my morning prayer and meditation and I have that connection, there's something special that happens. That not only do I get sober or stay sober, it's my medicine for the healing and that brokenness and that reminder that God said, you may have thought I didn't answer your prayers back then, but I've always answered your prayers and I'm right here with you. And to know the darkness of being alone, but today to know that I'm not alone and my higher power is present with me. And when I get crazy and they're going to send me, I think I'm going crazy, I have all of you to reach out and to know that I'm not alone. You know, there's some work that I do around what I, the four-step solution to divine intimacy. And these are just some basics for the newcomer. Is one, I like to read my daily reflections in the morning and some scripture. That's one. Two, I like to just think about what I'm reading. What did I just read? What is the message today? Number three, you know, and then I pray. And then four, I get to go into meditation. And I love this about this teaching because it's teaching me that in my meditation, I get to rest in the presence of God. And that morning, and that when I take that time, that something happens. Because life is about relationships. And I screwed up drunk and sober. But life is about relationships. And as Chicago Phil says about his emotional sobriety and why we do what we do is my relationship with God, other people, and myself. You know, and when I'm hurting and I'm confused, it's not just about... Because I want to sometimes use AA... And not take, you know, and I'm not perfect, not to bypass responsibility of my own spiritual growth and my own emotional sobriety. Because I love drama. I love that emotional cesspool inside, you know? You get that feeling? I'm addicted to it. If I can't find it, I'll create it. I'm not only an alcoholic, I'm addicted to drama. Don't you know who I am? You know, the pain and dealing with the pain of life on life's terms is that I'm finding that through the healing process and through the my taking my medicines through the steps, it's about healing. And I love this saying that it rings true to me in my heart. And that is pain transformed through the 12 steps is no longer pain transmitted. I am no saint, by no means. You know, the point is that I'm willing to grow along spiritual lines. We have a set of principles called the 12 Steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it teaches me to accept my spirituality of imperfection. And what a gift to be sober. That not, I used to say perhaps, but today I'm living the life God intended me to live. And not that I'm better than or less than, but it's what's in me. My emotional sobriety, mind, body, and spirit, warts and all. But I'm learning through AA to continue to suit up and show up. And as when I'm having a good experience with you, I'm also having a good experience within. And that's all I've ever wanted in life. I remember being locked up. They said, "What do you want, Lawrence?" And I remember crying, "All I want to do is be happy." And I found happiness, joy, and freedom in Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Lawrence. Our next speaker is Lori H. from Illinois.
He did such a great job. I was just fascinated listening. Hi, I'm Lori. I'm an alcoholic. And first of all, I'd like to thank the committee for inviting me to participate. This is amazing, and I'm so grateful this morning. I got a little tearful. Well, I usually do, but and it fogged up my contacts, so you're all a big blur. This is great. There are three things that if I keep in an active state, I can live comfortably in my own skin today. The first is a sobriety date, and I've been sober since December 9th of 1988. The second is a home group in Oaklawn. Big Book in Oaklawn, Illinois is my home group. We meet on Thursdays. Well. Hello, Illinois. We meet on Thursdays and Sundays and the first Saturday of every month. The third is sponsor, and I'm actively sponsored today, and active is the key. And those three things, if I do these things consistently, I'm able to stay on an even keel. That's not what I was like when I came to you in 1988. I was restless, irritable, and discontent. And that by staying with you and, again, Lawrence, thank you for a fine talk. I know that when I was able to come here and I took the actions of the steps, I started to see some stability, but something that's so vital for me even today is I've stayed consistent. I take the same actions that I took when I got sober, and I don't deviate because I don't know which one of those things. There might be 10 things, 15 things I do every day, but I don't know which one is keeping me here. And if I'd pick the wrong one if I started cutting them back. So it's not worth the risk to find out. You know, the three things that I said in an active state are the embodiment of what we have in our fellowship. They're the embodiment of recovery. That's my sobriety date. Unity. This is my home group. And service, which is sponsorship. And they're laid out for us in our steps, traditions, and concepts. As I said, I came in here and I had gotten active. I had taken the steps to the best of my ability. And I was active in service in our district. I had some great people that encouraged me to get involved in our service structure in Chicago. But at 4 years of sobriety, I hit a brick wall. The reality of it, it took me a while to see in retrospect what actually had taken place, was that I was physically sober. Physically, let me put it this way. That's a really important part of this. I try not to drink vodka anymore. It's just so key to me. I don't know. I don't mess around with that. But you know what? When I came to you, I found out I was getting a phenomenon of craving. And I didn't know that. And I don't know how much it would take for me to kick that ball into motion anymore again. And so it's not worth the risk to find out. So I read labels. I check how a dessert is made, because that can make a big difference. Maybe not for the general public, but it can for me. So I just don't mess around with it. Again, I was at 4 years of sobriety. It was kind of like, is this all there is? I have a big, big fear of complacency. I used to get all excited about things, and then I'd lose interest or get bored and forget about them. I have found all these dress patterns that I pinned and cut out in my attic, but I got bored with it and I just never sewed them up. And I was afraid I was going to treat sobriety the same way. That's why I was so fortunate of the people that encouraged me to get active in service. In the very beginning, when I came, I was a GSR early in my first year, I believe, and I went to our district meeting and they said, you could be the secretary because you're the only one in the room that knows how to type. But that might sound kind of goofy, but I could give back something. I was so excited to be able to give back something. And that encouraged me to stay, get active with our district and area. What was that brick wall, though, again, that I came to, I had made amends, taken steps, made amends, taken an inventory to the best of my ability. But it seemed like I was getting bored. I think I was just getting bored. Because it isn't, you know, that sobriety day home group and sponsor, that essence is simply not, I don't drink today, I go to a meeting and I'll call Deb on Tuesday night at 10 o'clock. There's a little more to it than that. You know, sobriety 101 is we have to physically get sober so this stuff can start to make some sense. The emotional sobriety was kind of like phase two of my development. And all this was going on and I didn't know it. At that brick wall, I was introduced to some people that talked about sponsorship, that talked about traditions and how I can apply them personally. They talked about the Big Book. I had been going to great meetings, but not a Big Book study, and I was introduced to our text at right around that time and fell in love with it. There was a group of us, same kind of, we had gotten around the same amount of sobriety and felt that boredom starting to kick in. We started this Big Book workshop. We took the actions as defined in the book. We also at that point had gotten active sponsors. Before it was just a phone number. You know, call me if you're going to drink. I tell you, that's the last number I'm going to call if I get to the place that I... Now, newcomer, don't take that to... No. My point is if I get to that place that I'm ready to take a drink, it is not the fact I get struck drunk. It's the inactions and the kind of shaving off the corners that I've done all along, and that drink will be a result. That's why I don't deviate some of these consistencies. So we did the Big Book study. We started our little Oakland Big Book group, and we were so on fire with this. Oh, my gosh, it was like we wrote the book. We were just lunatics. We had a meeting, and we'd all stand at the door waiting for the new guy. We wanted to carry the message. We finally found out what the message was, the one you've all known all along, but we're finding out about it, and we're ready for the new guy. And we'd stand around the door. No one would come to our meeting. It was scary. But it was great for us. We got a few people, and they came in and stayed. You know, there is a God in their life if they could survive us. But it was something to be excited about. It's just such zeal. But what I saw even then, and maybe it was simply my time in sobriety, maybe it was that I was physically sober, what I realized, I was still taking the same actions and had the same behaviors as I was taking while I was drinking, but I couldn't blame alcohol anymore. It was just plain immoral, bad behavior. And it was all on me. It was all on me. I had taken steps. I had made amends, but I continued to make the same mistakes. At this time when we started this journey, I was introduced to people that talked about the traditions and how we can apply them personally. And you know, the reality is we really see the traditions in action before we even talk to people about the steps. As soon as someone walks in the door and we say, we don't care where you've been, we're just glad you're here. They're seeing the traditions in action. But when I could apply these personally, I work in a car dealership as an office manager. I always thought manager meant boss. So I had to be bossy. I was like a little kid when I came to you. I mean, just childlike emotions. But I didn't know, you know, it's interesting. Lawrence was talking about coming in here and feeling broken. I wasn't. I thought I had it all together. I just found out I'm powerless and unmanageable. But I thought, until I was around here for a little while and heard you share at your meetings, heard you share what happened to you or how you felt, it started to make sense to me. And the reality is I may have admitted it, that I was an alcoholic, but I hadn't accepted it. I think actually I caught it from you by being here for too long. But it started to make sense to me. But what I was seeing, as I said, when the traditions gave me something very specific, tradition one about unity. Can I go into my office and be one among many and not the boss? I don't have to be the boss anywhere. Can I? One big thing for me was I had never gotten along with my sister. I loved my dad. She didn't. She felt whatever, for whatever reasons. When we went over, my sponsor had gone through autonomy with. And that I love that the part in tradition four that says we have the right to be wrong, or you have the right to be wrong. Yeah, that's my point. Never crossed my mind I could be the one that's wrong. But it opened up the door. What it did was I got to see, you know, my sister has the autonomy to have her own experience. Just because it's not mine doesn't mean it's wrong or invalid to her. By being able to apply the principles that we have here in our whole triangle, something that was important to me too, that right at this time, I didn't have, we invited my current sponsor to come and speak at our home group. And Debbie talked about all three sides of the triangle. To me, I was fascinated. This something more kind of anxiousness or restless, irritable, discontent, possibly. But when she talked about all three sides of the triangle, this is exactly what I was looking for. And I asked her to be my sponsor. Unfortunately, we've been... I knew it would happen. We've been on this path together for 20 years. And my life changed. When she took me through all three sides of the triangle, the steps in the big book, the traditions in our 12 and 12 and our concepts in our service manual, and applied all of the principles in the total program, I changed. I don't know when it happened. I can't pinpoint it. I don't know when my behaviors and actions and attitudes start. I just grew up, and I don't know when that happened. I had such a huge ego, as I said, when I came in here, that I didn't think, I thought all of you were the problem. And I didn't realize there's so many things and behaviors and actions. And there's a little thing I read in the morning. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's on emotional maturity. It says a mature person has developed attitudes in relation to himself and his environment, which have lifted him above childishness in thoughts and behavior. Sometimes I still have problems with it. When I opened up the invitation to be on this panel, I burst into tears. I thought, oh, well, this is going to be great. Oh, dear. As I said, by incorporating all three sides of the triangle in the recovery, this is where I was able to see big changes in myself. And not always. There are sometimes those old ideas, and they are old ideas. Old behaviors would sneak in. And you know when I know? I don't know if you've ever experienced an emotional hangover. I thought of it the other day, and you know what it reminds me of? It kind of gets me in my gut because it's so familiar, this incomprehensible demoralization, that I did it again. How could I have spoken that sharply to that person? How could I cause harm to that person? I never meant to do that. It's such a familiar, ugly feeling. It's not like I came in here. There's a line in our big book that says, this is paraphrased badly, that we ask God every day whatever we need for that day, and he'll give us whatever we need to take care of us, blah, 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 blah. It's not like he says, Lori, I'm just going to wash you with emotional sobriety. No, no, no. I get, Lori, we're going to get an opportunity for growth today. That means, it's so funny. One of the greatest pieces of literature I think I've ever read, and it's been referred for me to read often, and I refer to people, is in Concept 9, it's on leadership. But it describes how I can be with people that I may not agree with or get along with, and how I can handle myself. And it always comes down to the same thing. I take my inventory before I take your inventory, and we get along better. That always works for me. It always comes back to that. That can I not... My old self was defending and arguing, and I had to be right. There's four pieces, four little words or pieces or sentences in our literature that have such an impact that it's kind of like... It created this design for living that's just been kind of part of who I am, like brushing my teeth, going to work, blah, doing all those things. The very first one is pause. It's such a small world, but this has saved me so many times. When I'm starting to feel that anxiousness or that you want to rip someone's face off feeling, if I could just pause, smile, shut up. Call Debbie. but that has saved me. If I don't react to reactions, if I can stop long enough, ask God into the situation so I could process it properly. I used to be that knee-jerk reactor girl. I would just strike back, and I had rights. I was entitled to something, and not anymore. Not like I'm a doormat or anything. I don't like the way I feel when I was acting that way, and I don't have to feel that way. So now I pause, and when I'm agitated or doubtful, can ask for the right thought or action. There are times I am completely incapable of separating the emotion from the information. I got to bring the wise one in for that one because I'm not capable. I'm not a goofy girl. I mean, sometimes I'm a goofy girl, but some things I can make decisions and these things on my own. Sometimes I just, it's like, you know what's out there, you know something's off here, but you can't put your finger on it. I need her objectivity to help me in to see what I need to do to proceed with that. In our 12 and 12, there's a line about a spiritual axiom that anytime I'm upset, there's something wrong with me in my spiritual condition. That's another thing with those little emotional hangovers or the twinges, or if I'm just starting to feel twitchy, I just have to stop. And this is where I get to take my inventory first. It's always easier to take someone else's inventory, but it's so much easier and beneficial when I focus on mine. Another thing in the end of our chapter on acceptance, there's a line about my rights and expectations. And when those things are out of line, I will have no peace. And how important is it really compared to my emotional sobriety? And there is nothing worth messing with my emotional sobriety. Because it's like dominoes. If this one starts going, physical sobriety will be the next one. And then the last thing is that in spiritual experience, it says that we change our reaction to life. That I don't know when it happened. I think it was being with patient people like you, letting me just plain grow up in the meetings, learn from my mistakes, have someone in here, knowing that I've got a new person that coming into a meeting to focus on. That's where I got the great relief. When I can be at peace with who I am, what I am, and where I am, and live with a quiet heart, is such a huge, huge distance from that restless, irritable, discontent child that came into your doors in 1988. Thank you for that.
Thank you so much, Lori. Listening to both of our speakers so far this morning has made me so grateful for those people early on, especially in my sobriety, who have taught me those skills to pause and to use the tools of AA so I can get to the goal of emotional sobriety, which for me is just that ability to be able to live inside of my own head, which was very elusive for a long time and can be sometimes today. Our final speaker this morning is Chandra Mohan from India.
Good afternoon. Chandra, alcoholic from India. Entirely by God's grace and the fellowship, I am away from the first fatal drink today. It's a pleasure and honor to be here on this 80th year anniversary. This is my first international convention. I'll tell something. I'm 6 feet 1 inch tall. Standing now here, I feel that now I am 6 feet 4 inches. I'm sure that once my share is over, you people will make me to my real size, right size. I think. And that's what I get from this fellowship. Whenever I have some problems, they give me right advice, right solutions, how to deal with my emotions. I will share my experience about this particular topic, emotional sobriety. The main thing, I came to this convention, 2011 I got US visa. Right now, I am working in Dubai. My family back in India, Kerala. I spoke to my wife that 2015 one convention is coming. I'm planning, I'm making some money to go for that. She said, it's wonderful, very good. But 3 months back, my eldest daughter got engaged and her marriage is fixed for September 14. It's a big deal because lot of money, everything from the girl's side. I have to come to this convention. I have to convince my wife. And the money involved is a big problem. So I spoke to her, luckily over telephone. What to do? This much money, $10,000, as I say in US currency, $10,000 is needed to go for that. I don't go for this convention. Another 5 years, there will be a convention will come. I will go. So that is a kind of emotional blackmail I was trying to do my wife. She understood very well. She knows that. Whether she say yes or no, I will go for the convention. She said that, don't worry about it, go. Go for the convention. I think that she has more emotional sobriety than me. A few incidents, this is a recent thing which happened in my life. But when I came to the fellowship, and I think that it is customary to say the sobriety date here. My date of sobriety is October 4, 1998. I came to the fellowship and the group was very new. And there was only one meeting in a week on Sunday at 6 o'clock in my native place. I was very good to the meeting. I go to the meeting in time. I do everything, fix the things, timings, everything, all the things. I come back. I was having my daughter, my wife, she is working. I was in the verge of, firing from my job. I was working in a bank at that time. I was sober. And my daughter, wife, all happy. On Sunday, every Sunday, by 4 o'clock, they push me to go for the meeting. So I'm very happy because I changed a lot. And later on, I came to know that 5 o'clock, there is a local serial in the TV. They want to watch it. Four years, no sponsor, going to the meeting, coming back. The third year, my wife told me, it is better you go and drink. That is the bottom line. I was very good outside. One of my friends used to say, outside butter, inside gutter. That was me. Luckily, I got a sponsor later on. I started walking my steps. Honestly, I started. There is some change. I felt that change, emotional change. There is one more. My personal experience is that my eldest brother, I always branded him as a downtrodden alcoholic. He lies in the gutter. Somebody has to help him to come to home. When I got this message, I was sober. I'm going to the meeting. Whenever I go to my native place, I meet my elder brother and said that, you come to AA. You can stop drinking. 3 years, nothing happened. But fifth year, he called me and asked, what is this program? Now he is 12 years sober. I do very well understand. I cannot transmit what I don't have. That is one incident from my personal experience. And lot of things. My first birthday meeting in my native place, it is, you may be heard about biryani. There is a big feast, biryani, in India. After the meeting, people will have biryani. So for my birthday also, I borrowed some money. I don't have money to get food for my friends, AA friends. My wife and daughter came. And then sharing, all members said, oh, Chandramohan is doing wonderful service to the AA. He is going here, there. While coming back, my wife told me that she won't come for any AA meeting. This is 100% lies these people are telling. They don't know what's happening in the house. I don't come for the meeting. And another thing, I forgot to tell one thing that this chairperson told me that 15 minutes she will show me this thing. Then after that, kick me out from here. But I have my Indian watch. It shows IST, Indian stretchable time. So I go by that. Another funny thing, which one incident is that when I came, now I come to the topic. When I came, there are 5 steps to the podium. I think that the emotional sobriety starts from the 5th step. And I entered to this podium with the 5th step. So it is evident, and I understand that after 4 steps, my understanding is 5th to 11th step is the program to maintain my emotional sobriety. That is rigorous 100% honesty is needed for that. Once I go to the 5th step, I feel some belongingness. I can touch someone. I can confide to someone. It is not a confession up to that part, but Moreover to that, I have to do something. How to repair my things. How to be useful in society, my workplace, with my family, my daughter. These are the areas. It is very explicitly elaborated in 12 steps and 12 traditions. How to cope up with my emotions. It's well said. It is well said. Even for a snake can hiss, but don't put venom on others. That's what I understand. That's what I understand. And I also scribbled a lot of things in this, but I spoke to my sponsor before coming. What should I share? He told me, share from your heart, not from here. And if you share from here, you don't know what you are sharing, and people sitting in front of you don't know what crap you are sharing. So it is so better share from your heart, just like a meeting you are going. Don't be panicked. And whether you speak ill or bad, when you come out, the universe will be same. Thank you.